Welcome, everyone, to the Business and Industry Association, New Hampshire Public Radio, and New Hampshire Business Review Candidate Forum on Business and the Economy. I'm Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange on NHPR, along with Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter, and Jeff Feingold, editor of New Hampshire Business Review. And this event is being recorded at the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. For the next hour, we'll question the two candidates for U.S. Senate from New Hampshire, Republican incumbent Kelly Ayotte and Democratic Governor Maggie Hassan. And welcome to both of you. Thank you for being here. Each candidate will get 60 seconds to answer each question. There may be follow-up questions or points of clarification from the panel or from me, which will get 30 seconds from the candidate. And in the case of a direct attack or criticism, a 30-second response will be given. So here is the first question, and it's about healthcare, both of you. This week, the Obama administration said that premiums on the Affordable Care Act's federal exchanges will go up an average of 25% next year. And while subsidies may offset those increases for many, it's still not good news. And Governor Hassan, to you first, please, what could be done to limit those increases?
Well, first of all, thank you, Laura, for moderating, and to NHPR and the Business Review and the BIA for hosting this event, and to our panelists. Thank you both very, very much. And Senator Ayotte, thank you for participating, and to all of you who are here today and everybody listening, thanks so much for being a part of this event. Look, we know that it is really important to adjust and improve and fix some of the issues with the Affordable Care Act. But before the Affordable Care Act came into being, people who had pre-existing conditions couldn't buy health insurance. And I'm very pleased that we were able to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, so over 50,000 hardworking Granite Staters now have coverage, including substance abuse and behavioral health coverage. And in New Hampshire, because we worked in a bipartisan way on that Medicaid expansion program, the increases that were just reported today for New Hampshire plans on the exchange are among the lowest in the country. And that's in large part because we listened to everybody's ideas and moved forward with a plan that's actually added competition onto the exchange. There are certainly things that we have to do to improve, and I know my time is up, and I'm happy to talk more about that.
Well, and Democrats often say, Governor Hassan, that don't repeal the Affordable Care Act, but fix it. So real quickly, what's one fix that you would do if you were elected to the U.S. Senate?
Well, how about I list four really quickly? We have to repeal the medical device tax. We have to repeal the Cadillac tax. We have to work to get generic drugs to market more quickly, and we have to focus on improving quality over quantity in our healthcare system.
So those taxes help pay for the program, though. So where does the money come from?
Well, you can look for other savings, but also in my overall economic plan, I talk about the tax loopholes that I would close that would offset many of those repeals of the medical device and Cadillac tax.
Okay, we've got a question later in the hour about taxes, so we will get to that. So to you, Senator Ayotte, a slightly different question. You voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. According to the Census Bureau, 90% of Americans now have coverage. If Obamacare isn't working, what would you replace it with to obtain similar levels of coverage?
First of all, I want to thank all of you for being here. Laura, thank you for hosting us, NHIOP, the Business Review, as well as the BIA for this important debate today. This issue is, here's two areas where we have agreement. I think that we need to address coverage for those who have pre-existing conditions. And those who have received coverage and you have a plan that you like, including those with Medicaid expansion, let's not pull the rug from them. And that's why I voted to extend Medicaid for 2 years so that we can work together on better New Hampshire-based solutions. But too many New Hampshire families are struggling with higher deductibles, higher copays, higher premiums, less choice. I would go for more competition from Washington, not one size fits all, so more opportunities for different kinds of plans. Let's finally allow competition across state lines among insurance companies. Let's make sure that we expand health savings and flexible spending accounts. I'm supporting legislation to do that. And then let's work together, because if it's one size fits all from Washington, then that's going to continue to drive up prices. We need more transparency in this system as well. So that people understand what the costs are of health care, which they can under this system right now.
Senator, a quick follow-up for you, please. A lot of people this year are talking about, could we increase competition by allowing folks to buy insurance across state lines. The state insurance regulators, though, say it's a myth that doing this would lower costs. They say it would make insurance less available, make insurance companies less accountable, leaving consumers with little protection. Again, that's from the Association of Insurance Commissioners. I wonder how you feel about that.
I think that it counters what we know about most other things. When you're in a competitive environment and you have more opportunity, for example, car insurance, where you can buy one across the nation, that the more choice increases competition. Now, the state insurance regulators have valid concerns about making sure that you can still regulate insurance and have consumer oversight, and we have to address that in all of this. But more opportunities, more competition, more choice, to me, in every instance, usually drives down prices.
Okay, healthcare, a huge issue for businesses. And Josh Rogers, the next question to you, please.
Let's talk about cybersecurity. Last week, hackers attacked the New Hampshire company Dyn, crippling commercial websites everywhere and bringing social media sites like Twitter and Reddit to a halt briefly. What can Congress do to better protect the security of the Internet? And why don't we go to you first, Senator Ayotte?
This is a real issue that we've seen with cybersecurity. Not only Dyn, but obviously many private businesses, and even we're being impacted by nation states as well. So at the national level, number one, we need to continue to improve actually the people that work in the government that have the technical qualifications and background to help protect personal information from the government, because we know that's been impacted from the IRS, OPM, but also engaging the private sector and how they can share information across with the government while having the protection of being able to do that, to ensure that we're working together to prevent these cyber attacks. And then at the national level, in terms of the defense of our nation and our homeland security, we need to make sure that we are very forceful with other countries who actually are nation state actors who are committing cyber attacks. And that's in the diplomatic front, and obviously in making sure that we're prepared with our cyber command in the armed services. So there are many things that we need to do. This is a very big issue in terms of our national security and also local businesses.
So, Governor, where would you rate this issue, and what would you do as a senator to address it?
Well, the security of our state is my top priority as governor, and in the United States Senate, the security of our country would always be my top priority. As governor, we've worked on cybersecurity, in particular, making sure that there are statewide guidelines that we all follow to improve and maintain cybersecurity, making sure that we have ongoing training for our personnel, and getting rid of outdated equipment that made us less safe. Moving forward at a national level, we have to invest in standards, in training, and partner with the private sector. And we absolutely have to lift the role of cybersecurity in the Pentagon to a combatant command level.
So I've got a follow-up. Hacking and hacked emails have obviously been at the center of the presidential race. And Senator Ayotte, I want to ask you something about what your fellow Republican Marco Rubio has said on this score, that it's wrong to use these against Democrats because next time it could be Republicans. What do you think about that?
What I make about it is that overall, what we see happening with the hacking in general is wrong, and that we need to address the actions, whether it's if there's the engagement of the Russian government or the Chinese government when it came to, for example, stealing records of our people on the OPM and using it, unfortunately, to impact people's personal information. So I think for, obviously, when we look at this issue, when things come in the public realm, we have to address them, but we should be looking to work together to make sure that countries are clear that we're not going to accept these kinds of cyber attacks.
And Governor, obviously things have come into the public realm, to use Senator Ayotte's term, that, you know, some consider troublesome about your chosen presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton. Have you learned anything in these emails that disturbs you in any way?
Well, what concerns me the most is that a foreign nation, Russia, appears to be behind these hacks. It does concern me that Senator Ayotte supported Donald Trump, who repeatedly invited attacks against our electoral system and against our candidate. And I think agreeing with Senator Rubio on this, discussing these and validating these leaks just encourages hackers and foreign states. We shouldn't be doing it.
Okay, and that was a direct criticism. So, Senator, I'll let you jump in there for 30 seconds, please.
Yeah, I mean, I've been very strong against Vladimir Putin in my time on the Armed Services Committee, and I've been very clear that unfortunately under this administration, the whole reset policy, that we have not been as forceful against the Russians as we should with many of their aggressive actions around the world, including their cyber attacks. And that, you know, goes back to, if you look at what Secretary Clinton, in being really one of the architects of this policy, it led to a course of conduct where we are today. And in terms of what's in the public realm, it is of concern what's out there, where you have Secretary Clinton talking about having a different position publicly versus privately. And, you know, I think when it comes to people who represent us, the position should be the same, whether it's public or private.
Let's move on. Jeff Feingold, next question from you.
Thanks, Laura. I have a question for both of you, and it's on high energy costs, which has been a major, major concern of New Hampshire businesses for several years. Yet efforts to increase energy supplies, whether it's hydropower, natural gas, pipelines, wind farms, always seem to meet with local opposition. How do we change that? And Governor Hassan, I'd like to go to you first.
Well, we know from talking with businesses that the cost of energy is of great concern to them. We also know how important it is that if we are going to site new energy projects, that we do it in a way that respects our natural resources and respects our community concerns. For instance, on the Northern Pass, it's been very clear that the original proposal that the company came forward with wasn't acceptable. The people of the North Country in particular have done an excellent job of raising really critical issues about putting the transmission lines underground. They revised their policy or their plan and proposal. It's now before the SEC. They've still got work to do, to be sure, but we need to have policies and plans and processes that honor local voices and honor business concerns as well about the cost of energy and get to win-wins here. I have an economic plan that calls for, among other things, investing in a clean energy economy so that we can create jobs, so that we can be energy independent, and so that we can make sure that we're protecting our environment and combating climate change, too.
Senator Ayotte.
I would say this is about leadership at certainly the state level, because each of these projects that comes in, whether it's the Northern Pass, which I believe should be fully buried, you see people pushing projects and companies pushing projects without really having, first of all, the engagement at the state level of how do we make sure that these projects protect our natural environment. Same thing with the Kinder Morgan pipeline, where so many concerns were raised by people in New Hampshire, yet at the same time, these projects keep getting pushed without the engagement up front of what is best for New Hampshire. Where's the best place to site these things? We're making sure that local residents' concerns are heard and addressed in looking at how we address New Hampshire's energy challenges going forward.
Thank you, Senator Ayotte. Josh Rogers, back to you, please.
Sure. Let's talk corporate taxes. The United States has high corporate tax rates, according to some, the third highest rates in the world, yet some profitable companies avoid paying taxes at all, and that costs the Treasury hundreds of billions of dollars. What would you do to change that? And Senator Ayotte, let me go to you first.
I think we need tax reform. I mean, it's the way that our business taxes are just stupid. We have some of the highest business taxes in the developed world. And what's happening is we have our companies that are now here deciding to locate elsewhere in a global economy. And so the code needs to be simplified, lowered, and that way it's more enforceable. So it's less about specific breaks for certain businesses, but it's really about a lower rate, competitive rate for everyone. We have trillions of dollars parked overseas that can be invested here in the United States of America. We should make sure that those resources come home to invest here, and that we're allowing our businesses, both large and small. My husband owns a small business, so you have to think about the subchapter S businesses as well, and those small businesses when you do business reform. And also, I think, you know, we saw here in New Hampshire big differences on this, where you had Governor Hassan opposing business tax decreases, which we have seen have been very productive for our state. And I know our legislature had the foresight to say, let's make the taxes more competitive here. We need to do that at the national level.
And so, Governor Hassan, I want to shift the question a little bit for you. You have a history with business taxes here as governor. You vetoed a budget because it included tax reductions you said would blow a hole in future budgets. Right now, that isn't happening. And as you campaign for Senate, you're touting business tax cuts. Can you explain that?
Well, it's absolutely critical that we work together to make sure that we are addressing the needs of business, including cutting taxes for small businesses. As you know, in my first term, I doubled and made permanent with the legislature our R&D tax credit. My economic plan calls for small business tax cuts and expanding the federal R&D tax credit as well. I will always stand up for fiscal responsibility. And in addition to talking to me about the rate of taxes, I'm very glad we passed two fiscally responsible balanced budgets holding the line against an income or sales tax under my administration. Businesses also talked to me about other priorities like workforce training that they wanted to invest in. I'm very proud that I stood for fiscal responsibility and that we came together and made a compromise budget that included safeguards so that we could have the business tax cuts but also protect future budgets in the event that revenues fell or in the event that future legislatures decided that it wasn't a wise thing to do. And I'm glad we're now dealing with a surplus thanks to an improving economy and good management on behalf of the executive branch.
And a real quick follow-up to Josh's question to you first, Governor Hassan. So what do you think the corporate tax rate should be at the U.S. level?
Well, I think at the federal level, it is too high for some and too low for others, but this is a real difference between Senator Ayotte and myself. I wouldn't continue, as she has done, to vote to protect tax breakers. She talked about businesses going overseas. Well, she has voted against eliminating the moving deduction for outsourcers. She has voted to protect tax breaks for big oil. She's voted to protect tax breaks for Wall Street CEOs. I think we should have a $1,000 tax break for middle-class families. That's also in my economic plan. We could pay for that and tax cuts for small businesses by closing the loopholes that Senator Ayotte continues to support.
No one particular.
I think we have to work on comprehensive tax reform. I think it should be a much more predictable and uniform rate. And I think right now what you see is some businesses paying almost nothing or nothing and other businesses paying too much.
Okay.
And it's partly because all of these loopholes are protected by the special interests that Senator Ayotte has been voting with.
All right. And Senator Ayotte, I'm going to give you 60 seconds on this one. Half of it, please, for what specific rate you would set and another to respond to the critique. So first of all, if you could just say, is there one corporate tax rate that you would
choose? I think we need to shoot for 25%. That makes us put us in a competitive realm. If you look at the other countries we're competing against around the world, and that's what economists who have looked at this have said would be a reasonable rate to make sure we're competitive. But I want to talk about Governor Hassan's budgets that she has talked about here today. Governor Hassan has a long history of supporting increases on taxes to businesses. Going back to the LLC income tax that really was going to hit our small businesses, she was an original sponsor of. The budgets that she's claiming credit for, when she vetoed the budget that reduced taxes on small businesses, essentially she called it dishonest. She ends up signing the same budget the one thing that is bipartisan about her budget is that Republicans and Democrats came together actually to override her veto. It's been called largely partisan. That's not the approach that we need in Washington. And let me address the issues that she raises
and
tax breaks.
There, but
let me just be clear on this. First of all, I voted to simplify the tax code on subsidies for all energy sources. And there is no such thing as a tax break for companies who ship jobs overseas. You should really look at that on PolitiFact.
Okay, hang on. We will follow up on all this in just a moment after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. Welcome back to our candidate forum on business and the economy. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Josh Rogers and Jeff Feingold. This hour, we're talking with the two candidates for U.S. Senate from New Hampshire, Republican Senator Kelly Ayotte and Democratic Governor Maggie Hassan. And both of you, before we turn to our panelists, a moment ago, we had some back and forth about fiscal responsibility. Senator Ayotte, I want to give you 30 seconds to finish up your response to Governor Hassan's critique that the tax cuts that you have supported support corporate America and not middle-class families. And then, Governor Hassan, I want to give you 30 seconds to quickly rebut what Senator Ayotte said about your budget. And then I would love to get back to business and the economy and our panelists. But go ahead, Senator Ayotte.
I have certainly made sure that we vote to simplify this tax code, whether it's energy subsidies so that they're even for everyone. And I have long supported making sure that we simplify and make this a more competitive tax code. Governor Hassan was the original sponsor of the LLC income tax on small businesses. And when it comes to the most recent business tax cuts that have helped our state, she opposed them. And unfortunately, even when the legislature wanted to work on this, really, she took a partisan stand instead of being in a position where we can work together to make sure that we have a competitive environment for businesses here in New Hampshire. There's a big difference in this race in terms of how we're going to view what happens with small businesses.
And go ahead, 30 seconds, please, Governor.
Well, there is a big difference. And Senator Ayotte continues to side with corporate interests, voting with the Koch brothers nearly 90% of the time in her first 4 years in office, including protecting their big oil tax breaks. Let's talk a little bit about fiscal responsibility. When the numbers didn't add up in a budget that I was presented with, I held the line for fiscal responsibility because it all starts with that. I'm very pleased that even though we had our disagreements, we worked together in New Hampshire and came to a compromise budget that included important safeguards. And then I encouraged the legislature to override the veto, and I signed the budget because I thought the tax cuts were good. I thought they were important for businesses, but I also thought that we had put in safeguards because we worked for the compromise that would protect investments that business also count on for workforce training, for instance.
Okay.
So that's a real difference in approach.
Governor Hassan, I have to jump in 30 seconds. All right. Sorry, we need to move back to our panelists.
Okay.
Lots of important issues to the business people here. And Jeff Feingold, we're going back to you.
Okay, I have a question to ask you about this overtime rule that's about to take effect on December 1st.
Yeah.
It affects a lot of businesses in New Hampshire. And basically, they require workers on salary who make less than $47,000 a year to earn overtime. The Labor Department says these rules ensure that employers aren't exploited. But in New Hampshire, the change could affect more than 20% of salaried workers and many businesses and nonprofits among them. And they're worried they can't afford it. Do you support these new rules or not? And then Senator Ayotte first.
I don't support these new rules. And the reason I don't is that I've heard directly from small businesses in New Hampshire. I've heard directly from nonprofits in New Hampshire that are going to get hit hard by this. I mean, the community mental health centers are worried that they're going to be serving less people. And do I think that the cap should have been changed? Yes. But what happened is the Federal Department of Labor doubled it, didn't take into account, for example, I've had businesses from the North Country say, this doesn't work for the North Country. This is going to hurt us. So I've co-sponsored legislation in Washington to reevaluate this rule, to actually have the Department of Labor come out to communities and find out what the impact is going to be on the nonprofit sector, what it's going to be on small businesses in New Hampshire and different parts of our state. And that's the kind of approach that we need, not, you know, an agency in Washington making these very important decisions that hurt New Hampshire without really our feedback in the first place. And that's really what's happened, unfortunately, with this Department of Labor proposal. And I worry so much about the impact on the nonprofit community. They're very concerned about this.
Governor Hassan.
Well, I certainly think that we need to consider adjustments to the rule, but let's take a step back. If the economy were working better for middle-class families, we wouldn't have situations in which people who are earning $40,000 or $45,000 a year are being asked to work 80-hour weeks without getting the kind of overtime that under past rules and laws they did. And so what we have to do, I used to represent business in labor and employment matters. I understand that this regulation will have an impact, and I think it's something we have to look at closely. But there are also situations in which employers have purposely said that people who used to be categorized as hourly employees and who used to get overtime have just changed their label and called them salaried to avoid paying overtime. That doesn't help our middle-class families make ends meet. And I think it's really important that we focus on how we can make sure the economy works for all of our people, not just the folks at the top. And that's why I think the Labor Department took the step they did. It would have been better if Congress had addressed it themselves with the kind of input that Congress can get. But this is a Congress that hasn't been particularly functional or been interested in solving problems.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, Governor, Do you think there are any kind of businesses that or organizations that should be exempt from these rules, or any kind of employees that should be?
Well, I think we have to have salaries that really do reflect what people need to be able to make ends meet. We hear all the time from hardworking families who are working full-time that they can't make ends meet. And we have had a change in the way employers, some employers, not all employers, have categorized people to avoid paying overtime that under the law they were entitled to. I certainly understand the concerns that the nonprofit community is raising. I used to do a lot of work for nonprofit employers, but we need to come together and examine how what the impact's going to be and perhaps phase it in.
Okay.
But again, if Congress had addressed this, the Labor Department might not have needed to do it.
Governor Hassan, thank you. Senator Ayotte, you look like you wanted to
rebut
for 30 seconds.
It is a Department of Labor issue. They set those rates, and they did it, I think, without going out and reaching out to the people of this country or the people of New Hampshire. And we submitted, you know, I collected on my website so many comments from people in New Hampshire, nonprofits, businesses. We submitted them to the Department of Labor, and they just didn't listen. And that's why I'm sponsoring the legislation, to say that needs to be looked at, and people's feedback needs to be considered in terms of what's the final rule.
Okay, and Josh Rogers, back to you.
Okay, on this much, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump agree paid family leave is a good idea. Governor Hassan, I want to ask you, you say you support expanding paid family leave. How would this be funded?
So my economic plan calls for measures that we can take to foster innovation, support job-creating businesses, and expand opportunity for hardworking families. Among the things that it focuses on is lowering the cost of higher education, making sure that we're investing in early childhood education, and expanding access to paid family leave. And this is a real difference between my opponent and me. She has voted against doing that. I think it's really important that when people are facing the wonderful joy of a birth of a new child or caring for a family member, that they know that they have access to paid family leave. And again, my economic plan calls for closing corporate tax loopholes that my opponent has supported in order to be able to invest in those critical things for hardworking families.
So this would be paid for with tax revenue that you believe can be realized by tweaking
the
code?
We certainly can offset the cost of it by closing tax loopholes that we don't need and we can't afford.
And Senator Ayotte, you've supported a bill to allow hourly employees to bank time off for family leave instead of earning overtime, in other words, not quite paid family leave. Why do you think this is a better approach?
Actually, Josh, I've supported a number of different efforts. First one is expanding flexible spending accounts. Doubling those for families of money that they can set aside to help with child care costs. I've also supported a tax credit for companies that provide family leave so that we're encouraging companies to expand the leave that they provide families. And again, I think also programs like the Child Development Block Grant, which has been helpful for many working families that, for example, seek care through the YMCA. In addition to that, as we look at the issue that you raised, right now, if you're a government employee, you do have the flexibility. If an employee wants to take comp time, they can do that. Private companies, workers don't have that option. So I introduced legislation to give workers more flexibility. It's up to their choice, and employer can't force them to do it. But it gives, it really puts the hands in employees of deciding how they negotiate with their employer on flexibility.
But so on straight and up paid family leave.
I think that the measures that I supported that I just talked about, they're bipartisan. It's a way to extend and make sure that we have more leave. And certainly I'd like to see us have more opportunities for people to have leave, but we have to figure out how we would pay for that. And let me just make clear, I've already said I want to simplify our tax code. So when she keeps talking about all these loopholes and things, I'm very much for making sure that we have a fairer, more competitive tax code.
Well, I want to go to a question about the opioid crisis, a very important issue here in New Hampshire, economic impact. Go ahead, Jeff Feingold, please.
Yes, I'd like to ask both of you about this. Many New Hampshire employers say they're worried about how it's affecting the workforce. One study found almost $2 billion impact on our economy, and that was a few years ago. Now some states' attorney generals, including New Hampshire, are investigating possible legal action against drug companies for misleading the public about opioid painkillers. Senator Ayotte, You're a former attorney general. Mm-hmm. If you were still in that position, would you join in this effort?
Well, I haven't looked at the specifics of the lawsuit, but if they were misleading, and we know in some instances there were examples where they could have also made abuse deterrent opportunities for opioids sooner, and there have been issues with that. So I think it's a lawsuit that if the facts are there, I would pursue as Attorney General. But I also think that we need to really look overall. We're investing in research and non-opioid pain alternatives. That's something that I've supported in the recent legislation that I helped author, the Comprehensive Addiction Recovery Act. Those are also areas I hope we see these companies go in so that we have less people who are becoming addicted to these pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, I had another question. The entire Congress basically supported a bill that cut back on the Drug Enforcement Administration's authority to pursue pharmacies and drug wholesalers. In these are industries that really wanted this protection, so they put a lot of money into lobbying. Do they deserve that? Having the exemption from the DEA?
From the DEA?
Yeah,
I think that if you violate the law, then the DEA should be able to pursue you for violation of the law. So that, to me, is the case. And I've actually introduced, supported our DEA both locally and making sure that they have what they need. And also, the DEA has brought to my attention a lot of ways that we can help address this opioid epidemic, including the deadly impact of fentanyl, which is 50 times more powerful than heroin itself.
Go ahead. You had a question for Governor Hassan on the same issue, Jeff.
Yeah, Governor, I have a different question for you. You and the legislature paid a lot of attention to this issue, and still overdose deaths keep rising, and this year are on track to exceed last year's total of more than 430 people. The person you originally tapped to lead your administration's efforts left after a year under heavy criticism. You replaced him, but people say it took too long. What does this say about your judgment?
So, first of all, this epidemic impacts Granite Staters from all walks of life, employers. I think about the colleague of mine whose sister is in recovery but still working really hard to regain the trust of her children. The classmate of my son, who died tragically due to an overdose, and the people I meet every day who are struggling to beat addiction, the young man in rehab, or others who have talked to me about this. It is impacting all of us. I am pleased that after we got Medicaid expansion passed in our bipartisan effort, so important to combating this, that we were able to come together and we enacted in June a number of the proposals that I brought to the special session a year ago. I think what's really important is that we continue to focus on the progress we've been making here at the state level and continue to call on the feds to get the emergency funding we need.
Well, and shifting gears a little bit, we're going to take a question now from our other partner in this forum.
May I respond to that? Just one thing that concerns me is, having worked at the federal level and helping get national legislation passed, the Comprehensive Addiction Recovery Act, and I've supported the emergency funding with Senator Shaheen, trying to get us working together on a bipartisan basis to get as much resources here. Even the money that's going, 2/3 of it has not gone out the door yet at the state level, and so we need to get that money out to the local treatment and prevention folks and the people who are really on the front lines, and I hope that's an issue we can work together on, because that's important.
Governor Hassan, give you 30 on that, and then we do need to move on.
That's a pretty misleading statement. The dollars are either out the door or have been encumbered for payments during the fiscal year that they've been allotted for. And as Senator Aya may not know, we also are required by law to keep a small amount of money in state agencies. But at the end of the day, this is about bipartisan efforts working with the people of New Hampshire to move forward. We've expanded drug courts. We passed and reauthorized Medicaid expansion, which was the number one thing that treatment providers said we needed in order to expand treatment. We're working with law enforcement, and I'm very glad that after I proposed a number of these measures, after the legislature took some months
Governor.
We're getting the dollars out the door.
Thank you very much. And I did want to shift gears and move to one of our other partners in this forum. Val Zanchuk is with us. He's chair of the board at the Business and Industry Association of New Hampshire. And hello, Val. Good to see you. And please go ahead with your question.
Thank you, Laura. In this day of low unemployment and a shortage of skilled workers, many BIA members believe that common sense immigration reform is a part of a solution for developing our next generation workforce, boosting economic growth, creating jobs, and spurring innovation and entrepreneurship. Please give us your respective thoughts on how we can fix immigration in a way that helps businesses to find and attract the high-level talent that they need to succeed.
And Governor Haslam, we'll give that to you first. 1 minute, please.
Well, thank you. And it's long past time that the United States Congress come together and pass comprehensive immigration reform. In my view, that requires improved border security, and then it requires subjecting undocumented immigrants to background checks, to fines, to back taxes, and then allowing them to go to the back of the line behind people who are seeking entry legally to become citizens. I hear from businesses all the time about the need for a trained 21st century workforce, and that's why we've worked so hard to not only lower the cost, freeze in-state tuition at the university system and lower it at our community colleges, but our Gateway to Work program is so important in terms of training up people who are either on public assistance or at risk of being public assistance to become that current workforce we need right now. It's why I'll continue to work at the federal level to make sure that we have the kind of training grants and apprenticeship that really can make a difference as we move forward to strengthening our economy and making sure. I'm proud of the fact that we have 2.9% unemployment in New Hampshire, and I'm proud that CNBC just called us the most business-friendly state in the country, but we've got more work to do.
Well, and Senator Ayotte, same question to you, and thank you, Val, for that. You've worked a lot on immigration in the U.S. Senate.
I have. I think this is an issue that cries out for us to solve it, both illegal immigration and also have a legal immigration system that allows us to continue to grow our economy and become stronger here in New Hampshire, but across the country. I mean, all of us can trace our roots as an immigrant one way or the other in this country. And so I have supported on the illegal immigration front the bipartisan bill that did pass the Senate that I supported really would address doubling the amount of fencing, border agents, and entry-exit system. 40% of the people who stay here actually extend a visa, and we don't have an entry-exit system, an E-Verify system that works for our employers. I don't support sanctuary cities. I think we need to enforce our laws. Governor Hassan has. But when it comes to our workforce, we have people who come to this country, are educated in our best institutions, and we should provide opportunities for them to stay here if they want to work, be a productive part of our country, help us grow our economy, and make sure that we have the workforce that we need, but also let's also invest in our own STEM education so that we have the pipeline of American students that we need to be strong.
Coming up, more with our candidates on our forum on business and the economy right here on NHPR. Welcome back to our candidate forum on business and the economy. I'm Laura Kanoy, along with Josh Rogers and Jeff Feingold. This hour, we're sitting down with the two candidates for U.S. Senate from New Hampshire, Republican Senator Kelly Ayotte and Democratic Governor Maggie Hassan. Before we return to our panel and a question from my colleague Josh Rogers, Governor Hassan, I did want to give you a quick 30 seconds to respond to Senator Ayotte's comment about sanctuary cities in response to Val's question about immigration. So go ahead, if you could keep it to 30, that would be great.
Absolutely. We don't have any sanctuary cities in New Hampshire. And I believe very strongly that our local law enforcement should coordinate with federal officials if there is an illegal immigrant who poses a danger, for example. I think what Senator Ayotte was referring to was the fact that I agreed with Governor Lynch that we shouldn't pass down an unfunded mandate from the federal government to local law enforcement to enforce federal law.
Okay, thank you, Governor Hassan. And back to you, Josh Rogers, please.
All right, let's talk about guns for a moment. Governor, New Hampshire is home to several large gun manufacturers, as you know, and in fact, these firms account for a good deal of growth in state exports in the past half decade. But some victims of gun violence have tried and failed to sue gun makers because of a federal law that grants them protection from some liability suits. As a U.S. Senator, would you work to repeal that protection?
So first of all, I support the Second Amendment and the right of people to responsibly own firearms, whether it's for the defense of their homes, for recreation, or for hunting. And we have a proud tradition of responsible gun ownership in New Hampshire. Senator Ayotte and I do have a difference. I would expand background checks, for example, so that terrorists or other people who shouldn't get guns can't buy them online and at gun shows, something that Senator Ayotte has on multiple occasions voted against doing. So we do have some differences here. I am very grateful for the businesses in New Hampshire who create good jobs and produce guns that can be responsibly owned. But I don't think that gun manufacturers should have special kind of protections that other businesses don't have.
Okay, and Senator Ayotte, New Hampshire gun sellers favor a bill that's been sponsored by fellow Republican Congressman Frank Ginta. It aims to make it easier for gun shops to sell handguns across state lines. Supporters say this would boost New Hampshire businesses, sort of capitalizing on the lack of a sales tax, kind of New Hampshire advantage sort of argument. Do you think this is a good idea to encourage cross-border sales of handguns?
Well, I would have to look at the specific bill. I assume it's a House bill, so I'd need to read what the substance is of it. We do have great companies like Sig Sauer and Sturm Ruger and many others here in New Hampshire who, put many people to work. And for me, I would want to look at what are the specifics of the bill. But if our companies can sell to other people, they should be able to. Obviously, that should be done within the parameters of the law.
Jeff Feingold, back to you.
Yeah, I have a question on financial regulations. The financial services industry, this is for Senator Ayotte, by the way. Mm-hmm. The financial services industry complains about the Dodd-Frank law, which was enacted to curb the practices that contributed to the financial collapse of 2008. You've talked about loosening these regulations and voted to repeal the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Why?
Well, my concern is, number one, I think we should, as a former prosecutor, if somebody commits violations of our laws, let's prosecute them. But what I've heard from a lot of our small community banks, and yesterday we had a forum with realtors, I heard it from realtors well, I've heard it from car dealers, that you have the CFPB is an agency that actually doesn't come before Congress for oversight on its appropriations process. So I've supported more oversight of making sure, like any other agency, they come before us in terms of how they spend taxpayer dollars. An inspector general for the CFPB, and also a board of oversight for the CFPB. Why? I've heard it from small banks here in New Hampshire. One size fits all. We see consolidation in our banking industry, which is not good for New Hampshire consumers. And the small banks weren't the ones that caused this financial crisis. So they've raised these issues with me. I wanted to address these concerns. But again, realtors, car dealers, lots of folks in New Hampshire that feel that the CFPB really needs congressional oversight.
But it just in general, Senator, in light of the recent Wells Fargo scandal, do you think that's the right move? I mean, to not have a federal consumer protection role?
I support having the CFPB, but I want oversight. So that's where you see me supporting an IG for the CFPB. Oversight, like what other agency you don't come before Congress to look at the funding for it.
So basically, you're saying you support some kind of consumer financial protection.
I'm fine
Bureau.
With that. I just want oversight. I want more accountability, and I want to make sure when I hear from so many people in New Hampshire, especially small banks that serve our local communities, that our regulatory framework is one that allows those banks to continue to thrive, to grow, so that we don't have consolidation and we just have all big banks that people can go to.
I just want to go to the governor. Senator Ayotte raised this about Dodd-Frank. In recent years, we've seen several mergers of smaller community banks in New Hampshire. In almost all cases, one of the main reasons cited was the regulatory burden they face under Dodd-Frank. Given how crucial they are to local business lending, what should be done regarding these small local banks and Dodd-Frank?
Well, certainly our small community banks in New Hampshire are critical to not only our economy, but how we function in this state as a community. And I have also met with our bankers, and I do think that there are adjustments we could make to Dodd-Frank to really address their concerns. But I think it's also really important to remember that in 2008, Wall Street's risky behavior and the lack of regulation of that behavior devastated families and businesses all across the state of New Hampshire, having a ripple effect across our economy. We need to have an economy and a financial sector that is strong but works not only for Wall Street, but for middle-class families, too. That means no institution should be too big to fail. We should hold financial institutions accountable for risky investments. We need to improve transparency and cybersecurity for those firms. We also need to have regulators who are highly qualified and have the resources they need. But make no mistake about it, Senator Ayotte has voted to weaken Dodd-Frank considerably, to weaken the CFPB, and it's not entirely a surprise.
Okay, Governor, thank you. And go ahead, I'll give you 30 seconds, Senator Ayotte, on that.
If standing up for small entities in New Hampshire that serve our local communities, or our realtors, or our car dealers who put so many people to work, to make sure there's accountability for the CFPB or agencies in Washington, that is what I do every day. I listen to people in New Hampshire, I take that into account, and there are many heavy-handed approaches that come from Washington that don't make sense in terms of New Hampshire and the ability for us to help and serve people here and our small businesses. And that's what I've done with this one.
Moving on to the all-important question to businesses of infrastructure, an important question for everybody, really. Go ahead, Josh Rogers.
Governor, this is for you. You've been a supporter of commuter rail. And as you know, critics say, why spend money on rail when the state has immediate infrastructure needs in terms of bridges and roads, 154 state-owned redless bridges, roads in serious need of repair. You've now been governor for almost 4 years. What responsibility do you bear for the state of our roads and bridges?
Well, for the first time in a long time, we made the most significant state-level investment in transportation infrastructure in 23 years when we came together across party lines and did find a way to raise critical funds to invest in our roads, our bridges, and our highways, and we are fixing many of those right now. This is a real difference between Senator Ayotte and me. In 2012, she was the only member of our delegation to vote against critical funding, for instance, to complete I-93. She voted against funding that would have helped us with the Memorial Bridge. As governor, I've worked to address those issues. We're going to complete the expansion of I-93. We built a new Memorial Bridge. I support rail because it's critical to our 21st century economy. We know the next generation of workers want public transportation. We know in my economic plan calls for a private public infrastructure bank that would allow us to invest in projects like that with public seed money, but private investment and private return, which would be a win-win for everyone and has strong bipartisan support.
Okay, and Josh, before you get to your next question on this issue, I did want to give you, Senator Ayotte, 30 seconds on that critique that you were the only member of the New Hampshire delegation to vote against money for New Hampshire infrastructure.
Yeah, this is
needs.
A typical Washington gimmick. I've wanted a long-term funding bill for highways, which we, by the way, did finally pass, a five-year highway bill, the first one in the decade that I supported and helped be involved in getting done. And that provides an additional $15 million per year for New Hampshire. But the 2012 bill was your typical one. 2 years short-term, not good for highways or bridges, paid for over 10 years. And so I pushed to make sure that we would go in the long-term direction, which is what we did when we passed the five-year highway bill that I supported. And by the way, when you talk about the public-private infrastructure bank, I introduced legislation in Washington to allow New Hampshire to do that. I've also introduced legislation that money that's parked overseas from all those the companies to allow them to bring it home at a competitive rate and invest the revenue in it in more
Senator.
Transportation infrastructure for New Hampshire.
Go ahead, Josh, back to you.
Senator, we'll stick with you. You've been leery of bringing commuter rail to southern New Hampshire, even though plenty of business leaders in the region support it. One of their arguments is that rail will attract and retain younger workers. Are they wrong about that?
Josh, actually what I've said about commuter rail is I'm willing to help support a plan that's put together by the state. If there's a plan that comes forward how we're going to fund this and there's a federal piece, I'll work with our delegation to make sure that federal piece is there. But I haven't seen yet the state come forward with the plan on how this is fully going to be funded, and I assume it would involve a piece from Massachusetts, it would involve local communities, it would involve the state. So I'm really wanting to know, I think many of the questions, yes, if we could have rail here in a financially sustainable way, I'll fight for it from the delegation front, but I need that plan submitted from the state.
And if I could, just a couple of things. Senator Ayotte's been in the Senate now for 6 years and has done literally nothing to help us get rail here in New Hampshire. I'm disappointed that the legislature decided not to proceed with the environmental and engineering work that we had funding for that would have allowed us to develop the next stage of plans. But really, this is about coming together, finding a way to get a critical commuter rail into Nashua and Manchester, helping us grow our economy, for instance, by making Manchester Airport an international one.
Okay, I'm going to give you 30 seconds on that.
Yeah, Senator, I mean, I think, you know, serving on the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, you know, I've asked many of our federal officials about how would we fund these kinds of projects that we would have availability of federal funds. But the issue is that you need a plan from the state, an investment and buy-in from not only the governor's office, but the legislature to come to the federal delegation and to say, what's the buy-in also from Massachusetts on their end? And the governor obviously needs to be the one to come to us and say, this is how we're going to do it. We're all together on this. And I'm happy to work with you on that. But I haven't seen that plan come to me either.
All right. Well, we have a couple minutes left. Hard to believe. This has been great. And I did want to switch gears again to what we like to call the lightning round. Now, just like the name implies, we'd like you to answer these questions quickly if you could. Extra points for yes or no. I know that's hard. Several of these questions were submitted by NHPR listeners, and we really thank them for that. So here we go. Ready? Short answers or yes or no. So, Senator Ayotte, you first. At the end of your next six-year term, if reelected, what should the federal minimum wage be? Pick a dollar amount, please.
I think that really determines, I can't give you a dollar amount because it's going to depend on the economic conditions. What we want to make sure is that if you look at minimum wage, which I'm open to raising, that you don't lose jobs. And the last proposal we had before the Congress, the economic analysis is that we lose 500,000 to 1 million jobs. And I don't think our focus should be on minimum wage jobs. You move from minimum to minimum. Let's make sure that we give people the opportunity to have the education to have many better paying jobs that are actually vacant here in New Hampshire.
Open to an increase, but don't want to.
I want to make sure that we know, are we going to lose jobs if we do it? I mean, my first job was as a minimum wage job.
And Governor Hassan, if you're elected to a six-year term, what should the minimum wage be at the end of that six-year term?
No one working full-time should live in poverty, which is the current state of affairs when somebody works a minimum wage job. Our surrounding states have raised it so that we can lose workers over the border. I support phasing in a minimum wage up to $12 an hour, working with businesses over time, so our working families have more money in their pockets to spend on consumer goods that our businesses sell.
Okay, so a dollar amount there. $12 is the
$12
one
over time.
Democrats are talking about this campaign season. Okay, here's the next one. The federal gas tax is 18 cents a gallon, hasn't been raised in almost a quarter century. To you first, Governor Hassan, should it be raised, yes or no? And if yes, by how much?
I don't support the increase of a federal gas tax at this time. I'm very proud of the fact that in New Hampshire, led by a Republican state senator, we were able to invest in critical financial transportation infrastructure.
Okay. Federal gas tax increase. Senator Ayotte?
No.
Okay. Here's another one. Canada has gotten rid of the penny. The government says it's just not worth the money and effort. This is a big economic issue in Canada. Should the U.S. get rid of the penny too? And Senator Ayotte?
No, I wouldn't get rid of the penny. Obviously, I'd want to look at the economic analysis, but my first instinct on this is no.
Sticking up for the penny. Governor Hassan.
Pennies can add up, so I would keep them.
Okay, great.
And we tell that to our kids.
Right? That's right, absolutely.
That's right. Okay, well, this one is from an NHPR listener, and I'll turn to you first, Senator Ayotte. Will you work to secure offshore wind energy for New Hampshire? Thanks to that listener. And Senator Ayotte, please.
I would only work to secure that if the people of New Hampshire thought it was appropriate, because one of the things I don't like is when energy projects get pushed on us and people in New Hampshire don't have that local feedback. So I'd want to hear directly from the people in New Hampshire on something like that, depending on what the proposal was.
Offshore wind energy, it's an interesting question.
Well, we have some examples in other parts of New England where communities have come together to support it. It's obviously very important to have community input. It's not clear that our ocean is deep enough at critical points along the New Hampshire coastline, but obviously this starts with the discussion of the people in New Hampshire. That being said, all clean energy projects need to be vetted not only for siting, but also to make sure that ratepayers in our state would really benefit.
All right, good job with the lightning round. And this concludes our candidate forum on business and the economy. I'd like to thank our partners, the Business and Industry Association of New Hampshire and New Hampshire Business Review, also my colleagues at New Hampshire Public Radio, and the venue for our event, the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. Thanks everyone in our audience for coming, and especially a big thanks again to our candidates, Senator Kelly Ayotte and Governor Maggie Hassan. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Laura.
Thank you all very much.